Tuesday, January 12th, 4:52 p.m. Children were playing. Parents were working. Millions of people were going about their daily lives.
For hundreds of thousands of them, they could not know that they were spending their last minute on this earth. 70 seconds later, a 7.0 earthquake would utterly decimate the country of Haiti.
We said when we broke the news live on the air that this was going to be bad, but nobody imagined just how bad. During the course of today's show, we will be listing relief agencies that you can donate to in order to help our fellow man. We here at the show ask that you give what you can. Even if it's just a dollar, it helps.
We'll start with the American Red Cross. 1-800-HELP-NOW.
This is Jim Alger, and this is Common Sense.
Oh, say can you see?
Why do the Republicans hate America?
Their only play right now in Congress is to hope the Democratic Party fails.
The airport experience is an abomination, and the airlines, for example, have capitalized on our fear and on our worries.
America comes in 37th in terms of the quality of care and its affordability.
I can't afford health care, you know, as it stands.
I just want to say Congressman King is an idiot.
It's not even us in the U.S. It's us in China now.
It's us in China.
It's going to be us, Russia, and China. The EU.
I don't know why in the world we would have anybody like this as a congressman to make such a blatant, idiotic statement.
Oh, please, Mayor Antonio, please shut up. Don't say anything. Just be quiet.
The insurance industry has been accused of running a shadow campaign here, pretending to cooperate on one hand, and yet funding the kind of accusations that we hear coming up in the mainstream media while disavowing and washing their hands of it.
We're in the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
The buzzword of the day is not torture. The buzzword of the day is enhanced interrogation techniques.
Can we just agree to call it torture?
Phone lines are open from Washington, D.C., 202-580-8514, 202-580-8514. From the rest of the United States, you can reach us at 415-762-1161. That's 415-762-1161. If you are joining us this evening from the United Kingdom, good morning to you. 020-3286-6728. 020-3286-6728 to speak with us live here in the studio.
And we are going to start off today's show by first apologizing to everyone for my voice. I probably sound like a frog, and a bad one at that. I've been fighting a cold the past couple of days, and for some whatever reason, I always seem to get these colds right before the show comes on the air. So I am partaking in tea with honey and cough medicine, and I have my array of remedies sitting in front of me here, and I will try not to set the studio on fire. We're going to start the show off with a very interesting question, and that is that given the failure of the President of the United States to push or fight for a progressive agenda, did the Democrats do the right thing in nominating Barack Obama? In other words, did you know, was he the right choice over someone like Hillary Clinton? And that is a really tough question. I asked this the other day on my Facebook account, and it'll just lit the entire board up for quite some time. And I'm curious to see what people think about this question. And I'm not taking a position on this. I am merely trying to offer this up as a discussion and see what people think. So that is the question. Now, we're looking at the Massachusetts State Senate race. where, of course, the Republican won and the Democrats managed to lose the one seat that they should, they really had no business losing. And so I'm gonna bring in Jency here, who's
hello.
Our show. Hello. You know what I really should do today? I should tell all my female listeners to turn the bass all the way up and lay their speakers down. Never mind. to help with this political crap, let's just do Love Line and call it a night.
Yeah. What is that, Delilah? You know,
yeah,
I could be like Delilah, only maybe snarkier.
So, you know, I posed this question on my Facebook the other day, and I really didn't expect the response that I got. I mean, some of it was visceral, and there was – but I'll say this much for the Democrats. If the response that I got on just my Facebook account is any indication – as to where the voters are, and of course it's not scientific at all, but if it's any indication at all, the Democrats are in a hell of a lot of trouble this November. Because there are some pissed off Democrats, and these are the people that are going to go out and campaign. I'm not worried about the Republicans beating the Democrats, I'm worried about the Democrats staying home. What's your take?
I'm seeing a lot of finger pointing right now within the Democratic Party. The people, I'm not necessarily speaking of those that are elected, but, you know, I think when Obama was elected, there was this big feeling that things were going to change. Things would be done differently. And I think most of the people that follow politics understand that, you know, the way politics is done is not necessarily going to change overnight. And, of course, a lot of conservatives would say, well, I didn't expect it to change anyway, you know, or if it did, it was, you know, we were going down the path of socialism or whatnot.
Blah, blah, blah.
But, you know, there's still this desire that you want it to not be all, you know, nasty and, you know, I didn't vote for Obama, but I was all wanting some of that hope, you know. I was all hopey-changey there, you know. And I think that there's been an expectation that the expectation level was way too high. I mean, of course he wasn't going to get all this stuff done, but he made everybody think that we could and that somehow, you know, I'd like to just have him go up to Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and tell them, look, dude, you're dropping the ball here. You're doing same old, you know, partisan this and that, and we want something different. But, and maybe he's told it to them in secret, but I'd really like to hear.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, how can we accuse the Democrats of really playing partisanship when the Republicans, and this is where, see, this, you come in from the right and you say, well, he's being partisan, and I come in from the left and saying that they are pandering too much to the right. I mean, I see, if it was up to me, I would have the House of Representatives pass the Senate bill, get it through Congress, let the President sign it, to hell with Scott Brown, and then turn around and fix it later. But at least we got a framework in there. I mean, we don't even have the framework in. And it's taken me a while to get to this position because I really came out opposed to the Senate health care bill a few months ago. I've had to kind of get moved on that given where the terrain is. And we seem to have a Democratic leader, and I use that term very loosely, in Harry Reid, that doesn't have the desire or will to shove anything through the Congress. The Republican Party, I mean, the Democratic Party has a larger margin now in the Senate and in Congress overall than the Republicans have had since the 1920s.
Seriously. I mean, if they've got – it's the time to do something. And really, if they're not going to take this advantage of this majority, whatever, to do their big agenda, then they just need to admit to everybody that they were just using those issues to get votes. Just like I feel the Republican Party has always held the unborn hostage to their agenda, you know, campaigning on, you know, pro-life, and then they've never used their you know, majority to enact anything that would have changed that. I'm just using that as an example. You know, I mean, do it. Do something, people. My gosh. I mean, not that I'd want them to do everything they want to do, but, you know. I'd just rather them take a position. And they're not so much, in my opinion, pandering to the Republicans. They're pandering to these elusive independents that they assume are going to vote with the Republican Party. And I just, you know... It's just really frustrating, Jim.
Well, one of the things in politics that political consultants and those who work in it know is that, generally speaking, the electorate has a very short memory.
What did you say?
I said, generally speaking, the electorate has a very short memory. Thanks. I'm sick, and you're going to do that to me?
Of course.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I'm going to sick all my fans on you. That's what I'm going to do. Here come the letters now.
Oh,
all
no.
Two of them. And I know because I'm
and
writing.
They're both there from your mom.
That's not true. I think my sister listens to this show, too.
I think that
I hate when my train of thought gets completely sidetracked. I think that the idea that the Democrats can't get anything through is what is frustrating people. It's not. I've always found it very interesting how a local Senate election in Massachusetts can become a referendum for the entire nation, but a presidential election in all 50 states is not.
Right.
To me, the Democrats played this up too much. They made this a must-win. They made this number. Here's a newsflash for everyone out there. The Democrats have never had 60 seats in the Senate in this election cycle. They don't have them.
When did 60 become the new 50?
Well, exactly. Bernie Sanders, an independent, and Joe Lieberman, let's face it, the guy just needs to, you know, he needs to just make her honest and marry the Republican Party already, and stop pretending to be a Democrat.
I'll take Lieberman. I was glad for y'all to take Spector.
You can have Lieberman and you can keep Spector too.
Nope.
The good thing that came out of the Scott Brown election, I think, is that maybe the Democrats will stop chasing that elusive 60 again, or are they going to sit here and try to get in bed with Olympia Snow to bring 60 back over again and not really be 60, and now we're back in this mess all over again?
And funny you should say getting in bed, because I'm glad Scott Brown ran for Senate, because otherwise I would have not had the pleasure of viewing his cosmopolitan centerfold.
Right, jeez.
I mean, hello? I mean, he was naked, except for a well-placed hand.
Okay. Okay,
this is my point. You want to know my point? I know you're thinking that. Levi Johnson, he's going to be running for Senate in about, 20 years. It's the same kind of picture.
It's scary. Scary.
There is hope for Levi Johnson.
Absolutely.
He doesn't just have to shill for pistachios.
Well, I don't know. Levi Johnson is a redneck. So I don't know what the heck.
He's from Alaska. How can he be a redneck?
They have rednecks in Alaska. Oh. They have rednecks every place you go.
Okay.
But he advertises himself as a redneck. We are seriously digressing.
I know. But sometimes you just get so fed up with the whole politics of it all. You just want to...
You know what? Screw the politics. I'll tell you what. We're going to go to commercial here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about our big story from last week, which was the Conan Leno situation, and what that matters in politics and how the whole thing transitions over. And a lot of people think this is all a BS story, and I'm here to tell you it's not. So we'll be back right after the break.
The odds of having a boy who grows up loving baseball.
1 in 6.
Which earns him a college scholarship.
1 in 2,500.
That gets him a contract in the minors.
1 in 3,700.
Which leads to starting shortstop in the majors.
1 in 290,000.
The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism?
1 in 150. You know the odds. Now learn the signs. Go to AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Common Sense Economics Rule Number 8. A corporation that makes billions in profits should not stick taxpayers with the bill for their employee benefits. Walmart's record profits have made the Walton family the richest in America. But because they fail to offer affordable health coverage to 700,000 workers, taxpayers shell out billions for government care. Why should taxpayers bail out a corporation making record profits? Walmart can afford to be a better employer. Now would be a good time to start.
I was raised Irish Catholic. We had Jesus on one wall and JFK on the other. I've always had an impassioned love for this country, even when I disagree with it. So many people like to wrap themselves in the flag, forgetting what it stands for. That beacon of hope for a people who had so little reason to hope. A people who believe that we could leave our children a world better than when we arrived. None of us are perfect. The politicians seem to have a knack for hypocrisy. It's because truth gets left behind when they arrive in Washington, choosing to win instead of doing the right thing. We've all seen the worst of our country. I would like to show my children the best. That's why I'm here.
Tune in to Common Sense with Jim Alger. www.getcommonsenseradio.com.
Whenever you see hundreds of thousands, even millions of people drawn to a cause, one should pay attention. On Conan O'Brien's last show, he asked the people not to be cynical. However, the people he asked had every reason to be cynical. They had just participated in one of the largest mass mobilization campaigns in recent memory, hurdling the Tonight Show into first place in the ratings, camping out in a pouring rain to protest a big corporation's decision to effectively end the Tonight Show as we know it. At the end of the day, what did they achieve? Conan O'Brien was still fired. The corporation simply ignored the overwhelming will of the people, as if they didn't exist at all. If that were the worst of it, we could all say, so what? With Haiti in ruins, a U.S. economy sputtering at best, home foreclosures rampant, 10% unemployment, and a health care system that is all but on a collision course with destiny, clearly we have better things to worry about. But that isn't the worst of it. The NBC versus Conan O'Brien train wreck has such a chord in this country because it's become a metaphor for almost everything that troubles all of us. A large, greedy, faceless corporation doing whatever the hell it damn well pleases while kicking the little guy. It was just plain wrong, and everyone knew it. Maybe that is why Jay Leno was taking such a hit. He's repeatedly claimed that he was fired, but his so-called firing here in the real world, we call a promotion. And in a time where people are having a hard time getting or keeping a job, nobody wants to hear it, Jay. It wasn't Jay's staff that hit the unemployment lines yesterday. It was Conan's. 200 people who moved their families from New York to Los Angeles at the behest of the very corporation who escorted them off the Universal lot last Friday. The kicker of the entire thing? NBC executives repeatedly stated that their experiment to move Jay Leno to 10 p.m. worked exactly as planned. So, according to NBC, they expected Jay Leno's ratings to tank. The subsequent ripple effect on every show after Leno caused the local affiliates to threaten to drop the show altogether, which sparked the reshuffling in the first place. This genius master plan that worked so well ended not in the brain trust that dreamed it up being fired, but Conan O'Brien, a victim of the scam in the first place. If that isn't enough of a slap in the face, one NBC executive called O'Brien a colossal failure. The irony? This is the same rocket scientist who was in the process of losing NBC over $200 million on the Winter Olympics, because they simply paid too much for them. But as usual, it was the little guy who took the fall while the decision-makers went scot-free. Even a 5-year-old can relate to that level of unfairness. I suppose NBC airing the Olympic Games is appropriate, because there is little doubt that if bad decision-making and avoiding any resemblance of accountability was an Olympic sport, NBC executives would bring home the gold. big paper bag. Give me a couple of phone numbers here to call us at the show. From the East Coast, 202-580-8514. 202-580-8514. From the West Coast, 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. And if you are listening to us from the United Kingdom, good morning to you. And you can call us at the show at 020-3286-6728. Once again, from the United Kingdom, 020-3286-6728. And, of course, we are discussing the Conan O'Brien, Jay Leno, NBC, David Letterman fiasco, Late Night Wars, and how it has really become a metaphor for bigger problems in this country. So give us a call at the various phone numbers, 415-762-1161 on the West Coast, 202-580-8514 on the East, or in the UK, 020-3286-6728, and speak your mind.
Joining us today again, the C. Allen Thompson, freelance writer, currently writing an article on the subject for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Mr. Thompson, welcome back to the show.
How are you doing today, Jim?
Doing pretty good. You were originally scheduled last week to be on at about 6:15, and then you got bumped to 6:45, and that kind of took up all of your time. And it really was kind of funny because it was pretty much what happened to Conan. But I wanted to bring you back because this I'm with Coco movement really got to a fervor. Obviously, last week, as Conan O'Brien's last show was on the air, on the Facebook fan page, there's now 812,000 people who are following the I'm with Coco movement. And you heard my comments just a few minutes ago regarding the correlation that I make, anyway, between corporate America doing whatever it wants and what we're all seeing right now with foreclosures and corporate bailouts and so forth. And so I wanted to give you a little more time to touch on this and maybe draw, you know, connect the dots as to why this is touching such a nerve in the United States.
I find it hard to put it any better than you put it, really. It's the little guy. You know, Conan O'Brien is, relatively speaking by comparison to NBC, he is the little guy. And America wants to stand up for that because we're all the little guy right now. And I think another big part of it is that Conan O'Brien is a stand-up class act, whereas Jay Leno is a guy who has walked on every person he can to get to the top. And I think America inside really wants to chew for the nice guy. That's the way I draw it anyway.
But do most people know that Jay Leno has done this? I mean, last week on the show, we played what he was saying then and what he's saying now, and I think maybe a lot of people now are starting to figure out, hey, what's going on here? But was this something that was really known before, or do you think this whole thing has exposed it?
I think it was known to your average Howard Stern listener, but pretty much anybody else now. Howard Stern likes to call Leno out on just about every show, and he's exactly right. And Rosie O'Donnell did the same thing on a pretty incredible YouTube clip I was listening to last week. She basically said that Leno is he's a skier who's fallen on his face, and he's holding on to the tow rope, and he's wondering why people aren't cheering for him. And I think that was a great parallel as well.
Well, someone not necessarily cheering for him, but is definitely partaking in trying to rebuild Jay Leno, and that's Oprah Winfrey. She's announced that he's coming on her show, and she is also claiming to be oblivious as to why there's been any pushback or so, or why Jay Leno is feeling any of the pushback. I find this, you know, more slick willy move of Jay Leno, because Conan O'Brien is gagged. He can't say a word for months. And so now they're going to try and rebuild Jay Leno while Conan O'Brien is duct taped in the basement.
And just, I'm not sure about this, but doesn't Oprah Winfrey own some controlling interest in NBC?
I have absolutely no idea about that.
I think she owns just about everything in the United States.
It's the United States of Oprah.
Yes, yes.
Well, exactly. Or Harper,
well,
whichever way you want
to. If Jay's going on Oprah, that must mean he's got a book coming out.
Yeah, yeah, maybe he does. Maybe he's going to write about the...
I'm watching the I'm with Coco feed right now on Facebook, and... you know, at one point, as a political animal, I say, you know, my God, why is everyone taken, you know, so into the whole Conan O'Brien thing? And then simultaneously, I look at, you know, because you look at what's going on in the world, and I know it's an unfair correlation to say, well, with Haiti and everything else, how dare you look at this? Of course, that's not fair because we can multitask in this nation. But I wonder if the general public takes the Conan O'Brien thing and they got involved with it, or, I mean, these guys were standing out in the pouring rain for hours, overnight in some cases. To make a stand, was it a true grassroots thing, or was it a kind of mob mentality where everyone just went along for the ride?
Well, it could have been both, realistically. I've been having fun going along for the ride with this. It's kind of distracted me from all of the other hubbub that's going on.
Well, I think we've all been having fun with it.
Are we now going to refer to the I'm with Coco people as the Coco baggers?
Actually, they're called coconuts.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
coconuts.
A lot better. I like that a lot better.
But I think, you know, I mean, it was definitely a grassroots campaign. I mean, I don't think Mike knew, like, had any idea what he was doing. And I don't think he knew that there were going to be so many people. I mean, we're almost at a million now. And who knows, by the time Conan gets on the air in September, crossing my fingers right now, how many people there will be.
But well, the latest news is that Conan is probably going to be going to Fox next year. Looks like September of next year, and it's going to be interesting to see how he handles against Jay Leno. I mean, against Jon Stewart and Jay Leno.
I would hate to have to choose between Coco and Jon Stewart, but I think I'm going to have to lean toward O'Brien. It'll be interesting. And with him going to Fox is much smarter, aside from their news network, of course, about how they run their television shows. I mean, they don't just go by Nielsen rating. I mean, that's so primitive. They go by DVD sales. They go by views on YouTube and Hulu. I think moving to Fox, he'll do much, much better than he ever could have at NBC. But that's just my opinion.
I'm not sure. I mean, does NBC, you know, NBC hits a wider audience. However, the one thing I think that Conan O'Brien should do is I think he should work for Fox for $1 so that NBC can continue to pay Conan's contract while he's working over at Fox. I think that would be awesome.
He could be a judge on American Idol one night. That would be awesome.
I think Conan might be too nice of a guy to do that personally, but I would definitely support him in that decision. But I mean, I think NBC reaches a pretty broad audience, but Fox is tailor-made toward the young audience. You know, they have shows like Family Guy, The Simpsons. I mean, this is the Conan O'Brien audience. And I think if they can retain them that late, I think he'll do extravagant, personally.
You know, just what you were saying about people and the little guy and why people were really rooting for Conan, I thought also about the last week's Supreme Court ruling regarding campaign financing and large corporations and their ability to spend money on advocacy and stuff. And to me, it just seems like the same thing keeps happening over and over again, where, you know...
The corporations just keep taking more and more control. They really do.
Yes.
Well, what I found out, as I said in the opening comment, what I found very interesting was two things. Number one, the NBC moved along and completely marginalized the I'm with Coco movement. And they just ignored them like they didn't even exist. But secondly, this thing, as I've come to find out, was cast in stone right from the beginning, from the very beginning. And what I mean by that is that it was written in Jay Leno's contract that he was to get paid out X amount of dollars in the event that they were to cancel his show or take him off the air. That amount of money was much higher than what was in Conan's contract. So from a pure financial standpoint, it was always going to be cheaper to buy out Conan than it was going to be to buy out Jay. And therefore, all Jay had to do was say the word yes, and Conan was the dead man. So Conan didn't really stand a chance, and I think he knew that right off the bat. And that's why he left. I mean, he was always going to be following Jay. It was Jay's ratings that were starting the trouble. And so it was never going to go anywhere, you know. So I'm wondering if the people who were standing out in line supporting Conan O'Brien were, you know, the voters that were out there for Obama and have now left to go to Team Conan movement, and are they gone for good? Can we mobilize these? You know, Mike Mitchell, who's running the I'm with Coco movement, was on our show last week, and I meant to ask him this question. And Mike, if you're listening, call in. I meant to ask him this question, which is, once they have, you know, Conan's in a new place and so forth, what does he do? What does Mike do with these 800,000 people? Can he mobilize them to other causes? He's trying to mobilize them right now to a Help Haiti cause, which is extraordinarily notable. Because Mike is now in the hardest part of community organizing, which is getting people on board is easy. Getting someone to click a link and say, hey, I'm part of this group is easy. Those 800,000 people have to somehow transition themselves into an activity, an action. If he could translate that into an activity or an action and get people to coalesce around various things, Mike could actually end up becoming a political force just with his mailing list.
Oh, absolutely. He's already slowly becoming an icon. And he just posted something about that last week. And, you know, I sat there wondering, with this kind of power, what could he do? And I think most Conan viewers are probably along the same lines politically and ideologically. So I think he could use this person to be this juggernaut, to be honest. I hope he does. And I was saying a while back that I think it's a little sad that we can't mobilize people politically the way we've done it with, you know, Team Coco, and I'm with Coco on various sites. But I think we can really do it.
Well, and like I said, that's going to depend on whether or not we are able to, Mike is able to, I say we, like I have anything to do with this, whether or not Mike is able to get these people to move into some type of activity and be able to keep them coalesced. We will continue this conversation and also talk about the State of the Union drinking game, which is going to be a fun thing to talk about. And I want to talk about this Nancy Grace news. I know we're supposed to be a political show, blah, 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 but I want to talk about this Nancy Grace news because this is just absolutely hysterical too, but it's hysterical and extraordinarily ironic. So we will be back in 2 minutes, 7 seconds. See you on the flip side.
The right-wing extremist Republican base is back. They lost the election. They lost on the Recovery Act, the budget, and children's health care. They've lost the confidence of the American people after 8 years of failed policies that ruined our economy and cost millions of jobs. Now, desperate Republicans and their well-funded allies are organizing angry mobs, just like they did during the election. Their goal? Destroy President Obama and stop the change Americans voted for overwhelmingly in November.
It will break him.
I hope he fails.
This mob activity is straight from the playbook of high-level Republican political operatives. They have no plan for moving our country forward, so they've called out the mob.
And I want to know, why are you people
Call the Republican Party. Tell them you've had enough of the mob. The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Common Sense Economics Rule Number 11. If a corporation makes record profits in this economy, they can afford to offer basic health coverage to their employees. Walmart makes $25,000 in profit every minute. Gave their CEO an $8 million bonus, but still refuses to offer affordable health coverage to 700,000 employees, nearly half their workforce. America's largest corporation can afford to be a better employer. Now would be a good time to start.
By now you have seen the pictures, the destruction, the torment. Please join me in doing something to help. Text the word Haiti to 90999 and $10 will be given automatically to the Red Cross and charged to your next phone bill. Every moment of delay, someone else dies. So please, do it now. We'll wait.
Welcome back to Common Sense Radio, 202-580-8514, 202-580-8514 from Washington, D.C., or really the entire eastern half of the United States. From the West Coast, you can reach us at 530-413-4511, 530-413-4511.
And before the break, we were talking about the entire Conan O'Brien fiasco. And joining us on the line is C. Allen Thompson, a freelance writer currently writing for the Minneapolis Star Tribune on the subject of Conan O'Brien. I want to talk about a different celebrity thing that's going on right now, just because I think this is absolutely hilarious. And that is that Nancy Grace filed papers in court. She's being sued right now by a family because of comments that she made on the air regarding a woman who later committed suicide after she essentially accused this woman of killing her own child, and it ended up not being true. And Nancy Grace filed papers that she didn't want her deposition to be televised. And the rationale behind it is what I find really ironic, and that was that she was afraid that the video could be used to, get this, poison the jury pool. This is Nancy Grace, who makes her entire living poisoning the jury pool and convicting people without trial on her show, which is the very thing that she's now on trial, albeit civil, for. Hit a brother up on this one. Do you see the irony?
I love it, to be honest. Short and sweet. I think it's justice. I really, really, really enjoy this.
I think that Nancy Grace is... This is the exact words. This is great. This is the exact words of what she said in her complaint, that disclosure of the videotape of Miss Grace's deposition was designed to harass, embarrass, and intimidate Miss Grace and corrupt the jury pool. I just have to sit back and go with any of that one. I just have to. I mean, you know, this is what I'm seeing, whether it's the Republican Party, the crazy Democrats, Nancy Grace, various celebrities. What is it with people just standing there and complaining about the exact behavior that they do on a daily basis?
Hypocrisy is a widespread poison.
It's beyond hypocrisy. I am absolutely beside myself. Now, Mr. Thompson and Jency, you brought up earlier today, go ahead and bring this one in, regarding this Mary Landrieu situation with these morons who went down and decided they thought it would be a hot idea to dress themselves up
as the village people. No, not the village people. I'm sorry. As construction workers, well, part of the village people, and attempted to allegedly plant bugs in a sitting United States senator's office. What the hell? Dempsey, what do you got?
Yeah, well, the guy, the main guy that's being discussed right now, his name is James O'Keefe III, just so to not harass his father. But he was the kind of folk hero of the conservative movement, so to speak, of late, because he did those undercover videos that's kind of created a scandal with Acorn, where he pretended to be a pimp, and he was asking them about things, about essentially how to evade your taxes, you know, human smuggling, child prostitution.
This is the whole Acorn fiasco.
Yes, yes.
When and some idiot volunteer or paid person with Acorn went and gave the whole, you know, they took that one individual, they painted the entire organization with that person's ridiculous behavior.
Right. So anyway, he was one of the young men who went in to tap her phones, dressed
allegedly.
Allegedly dressed as construction workers. And another one of the guys with him, his dad is a federal prosecutor in the state's attorney, U.S. Attorney General's office in Louisiana. So, you know, I don't even understand why, you know, you're sitting around, you're talking with your friends, you're having a beer or something, and you say, dude, hey, I've got
a brilliant idea.
Let's go down there to Senator Landrieu's office, and we will dress up like construction workers and have a hard hat, and we will look very authentic. And
these guys can work at NBC.
And we will tap her phones, and she will not even know it.
It
almost sounds like the beginning of a porn.
It does. What are you saying?
Oh, that, it gives me Wayne's World flashback to when they're up in the and Cassandra, you know.
This is like a bad episode of Punk'd Gone Wrong. And I was telling Jensi before he went on the air that there are two rocket scientists in Los Angeles. I'll even name these fools. One of them's name is Mitch Englander, who is currently a chief of staff for a city council member, and he is running for Los Angeles City Council. Another gentleman is Alex Padilla, and I'll tell you who he is in a minute. These two geniuses, years ago, thought it would be a great idea to break into the mayor's office in City Hall in the middle of the night. And they got caught. It all was kind of laughed off as a joke, and they went away, and no one really does understand to this day what in the hell they were doing in the mayor's office. But the other person who was there, Alex Padilla, is now a sitting California state senator. These jokers play by a different set of rules. They just do. I don't understand it. I don't get what the deal is, how it is that people, you know, if I broke into the mayor's office, I'd be sitting in jail. If I'd walk into, obviously, a sitting senator's office and bug the phones, I'm pretty sure Homeland Security would want to have a conversation with me, and I wouldn't like the end result of that. So to sit and see this happen now, yes, part of it is, of course, you kind of sit back and you relish it going, well, these idiots were obviously up to no good, you know. But I don't understand what is going on with this mentality in the country, and it just certainly seems bizarre that it's no longer about what's right or wrong. It's about winning at any cost. And we get to the point of trying to tap the phones of, and who does that anymore? Who shows up at your house dressed up like the phone guy? You know, that's like the only thing that was missing in this comedy skit was some idiot pulling up to a telephone pole in the van with a wire dropped down from it.
I think that the funniest thing about this whole thing is how O'Keefe is referred to as a filmmaker. I want to point that out. But I think the funniest thing, even funnier than that, is that people are actually shocked that conservatives or Republicans are trying to wiretap people. Am I the only one who remembers Nixon or Reagan or Bush Jr., Bush Sr.? This is a pretty... This seems to be their ongoing strategy.
Well, my question isn't why are the Republicans trying to wiretap the Democrats. My question is why the hell aren't the Democrats getting in on this game?
Yeah. Why aren't they spinning this? I mean, if they were to try to do this to the Republicans, they would have spin on this. It would be on Fox News 24 hours. Yet no one's talking about it.
Well, there's so much going on here that you have to just sit back and utterly just shake your head. I want to move on to something that's going to be fun. This is going to be fun for everybody watching. And that is, I hope you have the rules here, because I don't have it sitting in front of me, Jed C.
I do.
For those of you who are going to stay up and watch the State of the Union Address. Now, fun fact, the State of the Union Address did not used to be done in... Boy, that was not English.
State of the Union back in the day.
State of the Union Address was never done in person by the President of the United States up until the invention of television. You know what else was never done until the invention of television? Senate confirmation hearings. Those used to be rubber stamped and done, no problem. There was never all this grandstanding. Now this is completely grandstanding. But in any event, the State of the Union Address is tomorrow, and it's going to be, you know, wall to wall on every channel except Fox. I'm kidding. Maybe it's even going to be on Fox. And for those of you who are like me, who are not like me, rather, and fall asleep during the State of the Union Address, we have a way to make it fun for you, courtesy of the Huffington Post. And Jensi's going to go ahead and read off these rules for the drinking game. And what we can do, actually, I've got it on my screen now, is let's go back and forth, but I'll let you... You start off with the first one, because these are hilarious. So
okay, and we need to make sure we're not encouraging binge drinking here. You know, drink some Diet Coke, you know, or add some water in there.
Our co-host Natalie got started on this game a little bit early. We sent her the rules here, and then we sent her over a videotape of George Bush's State of the Union Address. And so, unfortunately, she's not with us this evening because she got started early.
She was just testing it, because I think that our listeners really want us to make sure that we're giving them accurate information. And if Natalie doesn't test out how the drinking game is effective, then, you know, we could be held liable for that by our listeners.
Yeah, I know, and then you know, that some people have other ways of doing this, but this is good. So get your pen and papers out, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to have some fun. And this is not ours. I wish we'd have thought of it, but this is courtesy of the Huffington Post.
Alex Leo.
And go for it, Jensi.
All right. If Obama says, let me be clear, do one shot.
If Obama says change isn't easy, one shot.
If Obama says, make no mistake, do one shot.
If Obama says, let me be clear, change isn't easy, make no mistake, he's screwing with you. So he's trying to get you drunk. Got to do five shots.
If Joe Wilson yells something, you got to do two shots.
If Obama yells back, finish the bottle.
If Obama says, jobs, do one shot. Two, if you're unemployed.
If Obama says health care, do not drink. You will not be given a replacement liver.
If Nancy Pelosi claps like a seal, do one shot. And let me interject, if Nancy Pelosi looks like she's wearing a Snuggie, you can do one shot, because she looked like she was wearing a Snuggie during one of those recent speeches.
If Nancy Pelosi becomes a seal, stop drinking for the love of God.
If Obama mentions Bo, that's his dog, go put beer in your dog's water bowl.
If Joe Biden nods off or laughs inappropriately or starts talking before the speech is over, three shots.
If Michelle Obama wears a slinky dress, go immediately to the Huffington Post style page for close-ups.
If Obama used the term congressional leadership, do two shots. But there's a cautionary tale here. You got to be very careful because all the laughing will make it difficult to swallow.
If Obama says he's fighting for you, do one shot, two if you believe him.
And if Obama mentions Haiti, text Haiti to the number 90999 and donate $10 to the Red Cross. But please make sure you have the money to do this before you actually do it. And that was the Huffington Post State of the Union drinking game that ought to make tomorrow evening much more fun. Please do this only at home and without the car keys anywhere in sight.
My question, can we play this live on the air? That would just be fun.
Yeah.
Can we play the State of the Union? See, I don't drink. So
nope.
probably not such a good idea.
Well,
it would be hilarious.
And Jim, this is just breaking across the interwebs. Part of the State of the Union address has been leaked, and Andy Borowitz has received a copy of it. I just want to read you one sentence. Obama says, my fellow Americans, let's be clear. If you wear your pants on the ground and your hat to the side, you run the risk of looking like a fool.
Very, very cool.
And then he will veto any health care bill that pays for gold in your mouth. So stay tuned for that tomorrow night.
Well, it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out tomorrow. I know that the president is proposing some controversial things, spending freezes and so forth. It's curious to know what it's going to look like when it all gets through Congress. And, you know, that being said, I want to say thank you very much to C. Allen Thompson, freelance writer, currently writing for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And thank you very much for joining us on the show. We are out of time, and so we need to say bid everyone adieu.
This has been Common Sense. On behalf of Janie, Jensi, Natalie, Chris, Mike, myself, and the entire Common Sense crew, thank you for joining us. Common Sense airs live every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, with the internet feed stream beginning 5 minutes earlier, courtesy of BBS Radio. Episodes are available on demand via iTunes. For further information, visit the show's webpage at www.getcommonsenseradio.com. The Common Sense Radio Show would like to send a very special thank you to our engineer, Seth Hendrick, as well as our musical composer, Stephen Glossner. Until next week, stay safe, keep your head held high, and remember to always replace the spin with common sense. Take them home, Steve.